This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Almost nobody thinks getting a college education is bad. The thing is, almost nobody can afford to pay the tuition without a little help. That brings us to the 529 plans.
It's a way families can save for college and earn great federal tax breaks. And in most states, they can earn state tax breaks as well.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll learn about the college savings plans that help families save tax-free for college. We'll also get tips from the NIH for ways to start healthy habits throughout the school year. Hear about a student in Myanmar who is trying to follow his passion for music and spend an academic minute trying to direct traffic in the sky. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. It's never too early to start saving for college. Now, how's that for an obvious statement? With so many students graduating college with tens of thousands of dollars of debt, parents and grandparents are trying to find ways to make the college experience less burdensome. That's where the 529 plans come in. These are tax-deferred, state-sponsored savings plans that can be used for college tuition or other college expenses. Every state in the nation, except one, has one or more college 529 plan, and in the past year, they've been growing at a record pace. Here to talk about these plans is Mike Fitzgerald, the president of the College Savings Plan Network and the state treasurer of Iowa. We spoke recently, and I asked for the basics of a 529 plan.
A 529 plan, and it's named after the federal tax code, Chapter 529, it's a way families can save for college and earn great federal tax breaks. And in most states, they can earn state tax breaks as well, and then have their investments professionally invested.
Does a child have to be a certain age before you can start one of these?
Well, to start one, you have to be born, because you need a Social Security number. A lot of people are anxious to get started when mother's pregnant, but you have to be born. But once you're born, you can have an account set up for you. And these are considered lifelong learning, so there's no age where you get kicked out either. So any time in life, if we find that. It's not just kids going to college. A lot of times people that maybe you're a school teacher today, but you'd like to be a nurse. Well, start putting a little money away in a 529 plan, and you can go to nursing school.
See, now, I just learned something. I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
It seems like there are two types. There's the actual savings plan, and there's the prepaid tuition plans. Are those both 529s, or are they just different things?
They're both 529 plans because they fall under the federal chapter that gives them both tax breaks. The difference is which most states have, all except Wyoming, a savings plan. You set up a savings account with an investment firm, just tell them how you want it invested, and it grows tax-free, and you'll probably get your state tax deduction as well. The prepaid program is a program that's offered in 10 different states where you could go, let's say in Alabama, where you go in and say, I want to buy a semester of school or 1 year of school tuition. And they'll set up a plan for you. It's going to cost you this much if you're a baby, and if you keep paying for 18 years, you've got your first year paid for. So those are prepaid plans.
And that locks the price of college in when you register it, right?
Absolutely. And they have been popular, matter of fact, and they've been a good investment because the cost of college has just skyrocketed. So if a few years ago you locked in to, Michigan has another program as well. Let's say you locked into the University of Michigan for a year or 2 years of tuition. Well, that's been one great investment. The problem is a number of these states are starting to shut them down because they can't afford to keep up with them. It's kind of like a pension plan. You can't afford to keep up with them. But there's 10 states that still offer them. They're great investments, and as well as the other.
You just mentioned that with the financial situation right now, are these plans still financially solvent? Is they're not robbing Peter to pay Paul and take some money out of the kitty there?
Well, the states that offer these are the ones that have to stand behind them. Most states, they're rock solid. But there's been a couple of issues where states saying, hey, if this gets out of hand, we're just going to give you your money back because we can't afford to keep honoring these high increase in costs, and that's what's happening in Alabama at this point in time. But they'll not take money from other savers, but the program is as good as the state you live in will stand behind it.
Now, how popular have these become? I see they seem to be growing.
Oh, they're growing like wildfire. The one thing Americans know, families know, grandparents love these programs because what can I do for my kids? And in our world today, you have to get an education. We know if you can get educated, you're going to earn, you know, you get a college degree, you'll earn $1 million in your lifetime, more than somebody who just has a high school diploma. So we know it's important. Families know it's important. And that's why they're growing. In these 529 plans, now we have just published a new report. We have $180 billion in these. We have 11 million accounts. And it's growing fast. People want to sign up for them because it's just a great way to save for college. And we know it's important to save for college.
Are there different mechanisms for different states for doing it, or is this pretty much a standard throughout the 49 that offer them?
Well, there are differences. You know, we've talked about you can buy the prepaid tuition in 10 states. That's very different. But if you're looking at savings plans, which all states except Wyoming offer them, even Washington, D.C. offers a college savings program. They're all very good ways to save, but some states offer differences, meaning first is cost. Some states charge more than others. The other thing is some states offer their own state tax discounts as well. You know, like Iowa, we can put in $2,975 into an account, deduct it from your Iowa income taxes, and it grows tax-free at the state level. Of course, we know there's seven states out there that don't have state income taxes, so it isn't an issue with those folks. But cost is a big deal, and state incentives is the second big deal. And that's why I always tell everyone, if you're looking at a 529 plan, check your own state first, because your own state will probably offer an incentive for you. The first place you should go. Check your own states first. The second place you should go is a website called collegesavings.org. That's the state's website, and you can compare the plans across the country. They're all pretty cheap, but they do differ in costs, and they differ in the number of just ways you could invest the money. You get to pick how you want the money invested, and that varies from state to state as well.
Well, someone's in Iowa and they've got one of these plans and they're about ready to go to college, and they think they'd rather go to Yale, which is out of Iowa. Is that money still good for that?
Absolutely. And this is similar with practically every plan in the country. These are set up to help families. So if you have a plan in Iowa and you want to go to Yale, that's great. And as a matter of fact, if you want to go to, let's say, Southern Methodist, a religious school, that's fine too. Or a junior college or a technical school. The family decides where they want to go, what school they want to go to. And that of these 529 plans, it's one of the great things. You go wherever you want. You don't have to live in Iowa or any other state you want to be in to join the plan. And then when you take the money out, go to any school in the country that's accredited that you want to go to.
Now, your website, is that like a clearinghouse for information on the different states to where people have to go in what state they live in?
Yeah, this website, collegesavings.org, it's put together. All the states, the 49 states and the District of Columbia belong to this organization, and it's a clearinghouse of information. We work together to keep the federal law in place and things like that as well. But we want people to have the right information about college savings plans. And so we set up a website. Go to that and compare the different states. You know, who has the cheapest, if that's what you want. Or the different investment options, if that's what you want. Some people like to invest in the stock market. Put all your money in the stock market until the kids are ready to go to school. Others are pretty cautious. And let's buy some bonds and keep it safe. Well, you can look at that and make your decision. Unbiased information.
You don't have to live in the state to get into that state's program?
No. All states, and I know Iowa specifically, but I know this is true of all states. You can live in any state in the country and go to the website, you pick out a plan you like, and you can go to it and invest in their plan. Like you could invest in Iowa's plan. And the child you're saving for doesn't have to live in Iowa. And when the child decides to go to school, let's say they go to Yale, they're not in Iowa. That's fine, too.
Okay.
These programs are set up to help people. You don't have, you know, because let's say grandparents, you know, they don't often live in the state where the kids are growing up, and it's just a restriction that doesn't serve any purpose. So people can live anywhere they want to. Kids can go to school anywhere they want to.
Mike Fitzgerald is the president of the College Savings Plan Network and the state treasurer of Iowa. You can learn more about your state's 529 plan at savingforcollege.com. Providing healthy choices for lunch in school is a good first step, but it's the only step unless students choose to eat them. Parents can help their kids develop healthy eating habits in and out of school, as well as goals for physical activity. Margot Kern from the National Institutes of Health recently spoke with Dr. Griffin Rogers, director of NIH's National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, who says the new school year is the perfect time for parents to emphasize healthy eating and physical activity.
A new school year signals time for kids to be with friends, study new subjects, and get involved in after-school activities. With so many demands on you and your child during the school year, it's easy for healthy eating and physical activity habits to take a back seat. We want to remind parents and their children that they don't have to let busy school days and after-school activities lead to skipped meals and inactivity. In fact, healthy eating and regular physical activity may help the whole family meet the challenges of a hectic school year.
Dr. Rogers suggests evaluating the foods your child eats at school.
Whether your child eats breakfast and lunch at school, or you pack these meals for him or her, these meals should provide your child with about two-thirds of the nutrients they need for the day. When your child buys meals at school, review the menu with them and help them choose healthier foods like turkey sandwich on whole grain bread. Encourage your child to think about what he or she drinks, too. Choose water, fat-free, or low-fat milk more often instead of soda or sweetened drinks or juices.
Encouraging physical activity should also be a top priority, says Rogers.
Children should be active every day, whether they play sports, take PE, or get from place to place by walking or bicycling. Make sure your child gets at least 60 minutes or more of physical activity on most, preferably all days of the week. If your child is not used to being active, encourage him or her to start with what they can do and build up to 60 minutes a day. Some activities that your child might enjoy include jumping rope, playing volleyball, or playing catch. Replace after-school TV watching and video game use with physical activity, and help your child get involved with activities at school or in your community. Volunteer as a family to clean up a local park or a playground.
Dr. Rogers also gives tips for helping children who may be overweight or obese.
Children grow at different rates at different times, so it's not always easy to tell if a child is overweight or obese. We know that overweight and obesity tends to run in families. In addition to genes, the world in which children and their family live and work and play may contribute to overweight and obesity. If your child is overweight or obese, he or she is at greater risk for developing serious health problems such as diabetes, high blood pressure, kidney disease, and other health issues. Helping children achieve and maintain healthier lifestyle habits, such as more physical activity or healthy eating, may lower their chances of developing diabetes, high blood pressure, and other serious health problems as adults. If you think your child is overweight or obese, talk to your health care provider. He or she can tell you if your child's weight, height, and blood pressure are in a healthy range.
For more information in English or Spanish on children, healthy eating, and physical activity, visit the Weight Control Information Network at win.niddk.nih.gov. And to learn more about managing diabetes in youth, visit the National Diabetes Education Program at yourdiabetesinfo.org. I'm Margot Kern.
Still to come, a student in Myanmar has to fight tradition and his family to pursue his passion. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past shows again, you can find us online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for the Best of Our Knowledge, number 1152. This is the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. For teenagers living in parts of the developing world, following their dreams is a luxury. If a family can afford to provide their child with an education in Myanmar, then that child devotes approximately 13 hours a day to rigorous learning. It is seen as a privilege to get an education, and there are weighty expectations attached to it. This is the story of Malcolm, a young man in Myanmar who is torn between wanting to maintain the respect of his family by focusing only on academics and following his passion of playing music. Ashley Overbeek of Open Orchard Productions has the story.
I'm Ashley Overbeek, and this summer I traveled 8,280 miles to Myanmar, the country formerly known as Burma, to visit my relatives for the first time. Situated in Southeast Asia, Myanmar is one of the poorest countries in the world. There is essentially no middle class. For those families who can afford an education, the children are expected to devote themselves to their studies, and that means working at least 13 hours a day. Having one parent from a Burmese background, I've gotten a taste of these kinds of expectations. But for Malcolm, a 16-year-old boy I met in Yangon, the pressure of Burmese culture is magnified as he tries to pursue his passion.
Yeah, I want to be a musician. And I don't mind if I'm broke or anything, you know. I don't mind if I live in the street, you know. I want to be a musician. I want to play music.
4 years ago, Malcolm found himself directionless. Studying was all he knew how to do.
I don't know what to do, just besides studying. I don't know what to do in life.
But Malcolm's life took on a new direction when he listened to a CD that ignited his passion for music.
2 years ago, my brother bought me a CD. And the CD is, it's the Beatles, you know, the Beatles' greatest hit. Now, he was like, this CD is just so good, you gotta listen to this. And I was like, who are these guys? I don't even know them. And he said, they're from the 60s, you know. They're the greatest band. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. And I listened to it. And I remember, I listened to it for 2 hours or something. You know, just 11 songs. But then, you know, I started playing guitars while listening to the Beatles. And then I decided I want to do work music as a career, you know. And I want to be a musician.
I myself have a passion for photojournalism, but I realized that if I had grown up in Myanmar, pursuing it might not have been an option. I would have been in the same boat as Malcolm, forced to choose between my dream and the people I love and respect.
Parents just came into my room and they were like, why are you always playing the guitar? Like, they were shouting and all. You know, music will get you nowhere, you know. Like, you won't get rich if you're gonna play music. They want me to continue their businesses, you know, family businesses, but I don't want to. So we're shouting. we're fighting, you know, we're having arguments and all. And then, they just left. They didn't talk to me for 3 days or something, but I keep playing my guitar. I'm not the son that my mom wants to be, you know.
After years of communist rule, the music industry in Myanmar is taking its baby steps.
Yeah, for the past 2 years, mostly the singers and, you know, all the songwriters, they copied songs from other countries, you know. All those mainstream artists, you know, their songs they copy and they rewrote the lyrics into Burmese lyrics and they just sing it, you know. So those were the music scenes in past years. But now singer-songwriters are, you know, getting popular. Well, yeah, I try to make my own lyrics, you know, I try to write my own songs.
Persistent in continuing his dream, Malcolm was finally rewarded with success.
Last month, a band calls me to play on the show, which is one of the biggest show in this country. So, I played bass in the band, and it was really big.
But perhaps his greatest achievement was winning his parents' approval, despite century-old traditions and values.
Last night, my mom told me, you know, we support your dream. Follow your dream, you know. Who knows, maybe one day you can become famous or successful. Or even if you don't become famous or successful, you can be happy for the rest of your life.
Again, that report was from Ashley Overbeek of Open Orchard Productions.
Damn this traffic jam. How I hate to be late. It hurts my motor to go so slow. Damn this traffic jam. Time I get home, my supper will be cold. Damn this traffic jam.
Keeping the air traffic system in the U.S. working and safe is nothing like playing music, but it is the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. When we fly, we place our trust in a system about which most of us know very little. Sid McGurk, associate professor of air traffic management at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, explains the inner workings of the air traffic control system that keeps us safe from takeoff to landing.
For most people, the glass cage on top of the tall, narrow building at the airport is where the air traffic controllers work. And they're right, partly. But in fact, there are two additional domains of air traffic control, radar approach control and en route control. Controllers in airport towers and radar approach facilities move aircraft into and out of an airport. Relying on visual observations and radar, they ensure that aircraft are safely spaced apart and they clear pilots for takeoffs and landings. Once a plane is airborne, controllers in radar approach control hand it off to en route controllers, who are then responsible for safe separation. En route controllers use radar to maintain a safe distance between aircraft. There are 20 en route air traffic control centers in the lower 48 states, one in Alaska, and a combined radar facility in Hawaii. Each center is assigned a block of airspace containing a defined route structure. Airplanes fly these designated routes to reach their destination. As an aircraft nears its destination, the en route controller issues a clearance for the initial descent and transition to the terminal environment, where approach controllers and tower controllers ensure a safe landing. Around 15,000 civilian air traffic controllers provide a safe, orderly, and expeditious movement of some 5,000 aircraft over the U.S. at any given moment. No 2 days are ever the same. Depending on the situation, a controller can be comfortable managing as many as 15 to 20 flights at a time or sweating bullets with only a handful of aircraft. It's a complex system staffed by ordinary people doing an extraordinary job. And yes, some of them work in that glass-top tower at your local airport.
That was Sid McGurk of Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors on our website, academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Shartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.